It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Well, my friends, our country just went over a precipice. History was made this week. Something unprecedented has happened. A former president and candidate favored to become president again, according to poll after poll, was just convicted of a crime in a kangaroo court where the crime was never actually stated in so many words. There was a lot of double talk, a lot of smoke and mirrors. I've heard lawyers running the gambit from conservative to liberal on the liberal networks, on the conservative Fox network, and one after another can't actually state what the crime is. Some of these men are law professors. Some of these women are law professors. We have become a banana republic. That's the so-called republic that isn't really a republic, where politicians jail their opponents. Now, that doesn't mean we're without hope. This can get appealed. It could even go to the Supreme Court. They have made some good rulings in the past, this present court. They've also made some spineless rulings. So who knows what will happen? The name Leslie Marshall may be familiar to you. She became famous as a liberal radio talk show host and is now a Democratic strategist. She was recently interviewed by Brett Baer on Fox News, and she says that this verdict, this trial, was not politically motivated. Oh, well. Thank you for clearing that up, Leslie. A Democratic strategist tells us the trial is not politically motivated. We can sleep well tonight. Of course she's going to say that. Not politically motivated? Alvin Bragg, the New York district attorney, while running for district attorney, ran on the campaign promise of getting Trump. He said, "I'm going to convict Trump of a crime." He named no crime. It was a lawyer in search of a crime. He didn't even tell us what it was going to be, but boy, it was going to be about something. And why did this trial come up during an election year? They're talking about stuff that went on back in the year 2017 and to some degree a couple of years before that. But it comes up during an election year? Well, in the midst of the trial, the judge tells Trump that he can't go out and campaign. He's got to be in the courtroom every day. And by the way, who was this judge, Judge Merchant? He's a man who has tried Trump before in other cases. They're supposed to do a rotation. It was not supposed to be his turn. He was selected anyway. He has donated to Biden, to a group called Stop Republicans. He should have recused himself, to make the understatement of the century. Meanwhile, Democrats are calling for Judge Alito to recuse himself from other cases, such as the January 6th case, because his wife put up a flag claiming solidarity with the January 6th protesters, a flag he made her take down. He's supposed to recuse himself. Oh, but not Judge Merchant. And then we have a former member of the Biden DOJ leaving the DOJ and helping this team, helping Bragg and his cohorts. Oh, it's not politically motivated at all, is it? Biden himself has gone on record saying he would attempt to prevent Trump from winning the presidency again through constitutional means. Constitutional means? Biden wouldn't know the Constitution from toilet paper. Constitutional means he was going to find some legal loophole to take Trump out of the election or prevent him from becoming president. And then this same judge puts a gag order on Trump during the trial, but not on Trump's opponents. Michael Cohen can go on the air with a podcast and talk all he wants. Stormy Daniel can talk. Trump says one word about it, he gets threatened with jail. Of course, the Democrats now have their talking point. Biden can claim that he's running against a criminal, that his opponent is a convicted felon. You're going to hear that phrase again and again the next few months. A convicted felon. Of course, we have to define felon only as one who's been legally convicted. Biden has not been convicted of anything, but he is guilty of felony. He's guilty of compromising our national security. It borders on espionage, if not espionage. He's made all kinds of deals with enemy nations for money. He went on TV and bragged about doing the very thing to the Ukraine that Trump was accused of doing to the Ukraine when he was impeached, not convicted, but impeached back when Trump was president. But none of this is politically motivated. No, the judge who donates to Biden's campaign, the judge who will not allow a legal expert to testify that Trump violated no election law, somebody who's an expert on election law, doesn't even allow him to testify. This shouldn't be. I know we're used to judges deciding what evidence is permitted and what isn't. It should not be up to them. Frankly, attorneys ought to be able to make any kind of case and bring forth any kind of evidence they want. If it's not good evidence, let the jury say that in their verdict. Meanwhile, Cohen has a former attorney. When Cohen got into trouble, they were putting the screws on him. They wanted him to say something nasty about Trump. They were really going after Trump, but they found some things that Cohen was guilty of. And Cohen's attorney, and he was able to tell us this because Cohen gave up attorney-client privilege eventually, he said, if I go to them with any dirt on Donald Trump, they will let you off. If there's anything you can tell me about Donald Trump that you know about as his attorney, tell me. And Cohen said, if I had anything, I would tell you because I don't want to go to jail. So he went ahead and said that in front of Congress, this ex-attorney of Cohen's. He was brought in to testify, but every other second he was interrupted by the prosecution and sustained by the judge. And then when he so much as looked at the judge with a scowl expression on his face, the judge said, you keep staring at me like that, I'm going to cite you for contempt of court. Oh, and when it finally wrapped up, here were the instructions the judge gave to the jury, because we still weren't sure what the actual crime was. It had started with a state charge about doctoring the books related to a payment that Cohen made to Stormy Daniel to keep quiet, a hush money payment. Supposedly that was written wrong in the books, but that's a state charge. The statute of limitations had run out. So Bragg turns it into a federal charge by connecting it with the campaign, saying that they hushed her up for the purpose of not interfering with Trump's bid to become president. In the meantime, even if they had done that, that's done all the time. Bill Clinton would have been in jail if that was a crime. But the point is, we can't even prove that Trump did it for that reason anyway. Cohen had previously said that he just did that for Trump as a favor because he was hoping Trump would put him in his cabinet and was disappointed when he didn't get into the cabinet. But anyway, that was a state charge. The statute of limitations had run out on it. He tries to connect it to a federal charge, but the FEC wouldn't prosecute over that because they said it didn't violate election rules. So when it finally comes time for this confused jury to deliberate, and I know a lot of people were hopeful because there were two attorneys on the jury, but they were New York attorneys involved in DEI. I think we all knew how they were going to vote, and they were probably very influential on the jury. In fact, they might have even been able to scare some jury members into saying, boy, you don't go along with us on Trump, maybe somebody's going to come after you. It might have occurred to somebody that Bragg was going to come after them. For a while, there apparently were one or two jurors that were holding out. Even the judge came in and said the jury can't reach a verdict, and then moments later, they reached one. What happened? I don't know, but I do know that this was an atmosphere of fear, because if they could go after a man like Trump with all his wealth and all his means to defend himself, they can go after anybody. So I can just imagine, and maybe we should be sympathetic, that the people in that jury were scared to death, even if they saw through what was going on at the trial. And yet it was hard to see through because it still wasn't clear what the crime was. And here's what the judge did. This was unprecedented. He said there's one of three crimes here: tax evasion, or election interference, or falsification of financial records. And you don't have to find him guilty of all three things. Just pick one. And then here's the kicker. He said you don't even all have to come to unanimous agreement on any one of them. If everybody on the jury believes in just one, and then maybe somebody else on the jury thinks he's guilty of another one, if at least between the 12 of you, he was guilty of one of those things or several of those things, doesn't even have to be all three of those things, then you can find him guilty. This has never been done in a court. Like I said, it was a kangaroo court. Is it behind door number one, door number two, or door number three? Or maybe it's by the curtain where Carol Merrill is standing. Meanwhile, Alvin Bragg had gone on record saying he was not going to prosecute a lot of armed robbers. The tax dollars of New York instead paying millions of dollars to see Donald Trump prosecuted. That is the state of our union, my friends. And it's a very, very sad state. It's a dictatorial state. The Democrats are running on the fact that Trump will be a dictator who doesn't want to cede power if he comes into power. They hope you forget he was already in power for 4 years and he did step down. Yeah, some people protested. He stepped down. He called only for peaceful protest. He did step down from power. The ones that don't want to step down from power are the Democrats. But they're very good at projection. What they're guilty of, they accuse their opponents of doing. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Trump is clobbering Biden in the polls, even in swing states. But perhaps Republicans shouldn't relax too much. It's very possible that the Democrats are getting ready to replace him with someone more electable. Well, I go back and forth on this one, and it's a subject you've certainly heard me talk about before on the radio, and that is, who will the Democrats really nominate? On paper, it's going to be Joe Biden. And we all know the problem with Biden. He's a mumbling, bumbling idiot. He's been caught in so many lies, we've lost track of them. Our country's never been in worse shape. He's the worst president we've ever had. He doesn't seem electable at all. He really didn't seem electable in 2020 either. He's much worse now, although you wouldn't have thought he could have gotten much worse back then. That election was stolen. I know we're not supposed to say that. You're only allowed to say an election was stolen if you're accusing Trump. If you accuse anybody that's a Democrat, well, then you're disloyal and you're un-American and you're unpatriotic, you're an insurrectionist. Anyway, it's going to be harder for them to steal it this time. Not that they couldn't pull it off, but I do think the Republicans are going to be much more careful this time. And that's why they're trying to put Donald Trump in jail. Who are we kidding? Here's the thing. You've got to wonder if Biden's such a mumbling, bumbling, stumbling idiot, and if it's so obvious to everybody, especially those closest to him, why are they even putting him up? Why are they even running him? Well, that's because people like having a marionette. I don't know exactly the names of every person that's truly controlling our country, but they would just be delighted to have Biden there. They're hoping they can control him. And with the media on their side, they think they can get away with it. If Trump goes to jail, they think they can get away with it. Problem is, even in the liberal mainstream media, they're starting to talk about Joe and they're getting very, very concerned. It's possible that they won't be able to pull this off any longer. And that's why I have mixed feelings about this. What is my prediction? Well, I can't really make one with any certainty. I can say that those who are truly controlling the country would love to continue running Biden, and they will still do it if they possibly can, but it may be occurring to them that they can't, so they have to put somebody else in. And we talked about this before. Who would be the natural choice? Well, his vice presidential running mate. If they came up with some emergency or some reason or something about his health, which wouldn't surprise anybody, why Joe Biden couldn't run after all, the conventional wisdom would be, well, give it to Kamala Harris. But she's as unpopular as Biden and almost just as stupid. Not quite as much. Nobody's that stupid. But she runs a close second, almost a photo finish. Nobody likes her. And she can't get through one sentence without giggling. Biden can't string three words together. Kamala strings all kinds of words together, but they make no sense. And then she giggles her way through. Nobody likes her. But here's the problem. She wasn't picked because of her qualifications, because, well, she's not qualified. She was picked because she was a woman, and she was picked because she's African American. They're checking the boxes. Now, some people like Gavin Newsom, not the people who left California under his leadership so much, but some people like Gavin Newsom. Certainly he can handle himself in public better than Biden. He's every bit as much of a monster with his evil policies, but he has more poise. He has more charisma. He has slicker hair. And that's the way a lot of people look at these things. Problem is, how do you drop an African-American woman and go to a man like Gavin Newsom? Well, there is another woman, and that's Michelle Obama. She's very popular. And I know, she's said a gazillion times that she's not interested in the presidency. This has come up before. My friends, that means absolutely nothing. Anyone who wants to be president always denies that they're looking for it. How many times has a popular governor or a popular senator been interviewed by Sean Hannity or somebody else, and he asks, are you running, or do you think you might be the VP? And you always hear, well, Sean, that's not even entering my mind. Right now, I'm just trying to serve the people of my state, and that's what I'm concentrating on. They all say that. Nobody believes it. Nobody takes it seriously. Certainly, I don't. So they could put Michelle Obama in there because they can check the boxes. She's also African-American. She's also a woman, if you're allowed to use the word she these days, but she's much more popular than Kamala Harris. Now, I hope I'm wrong, because she would be much more electable. She's much more likable. Her policies would be every bit as hideous. People would still be able to control her from behind the scenes, especially since Obama is probably one of the people that was continuing to control Biden from behind the scenes. And you know Trump. I love Trump, but let's face it, he has a big mouth. He would sooner or later say something insulting about Michelle Obama. He would give her some kind of nickname. And there's some people that just wouldn't be able to get by that. I'm not saying Trump couldn't still pull it off. I'm not saying he couldn't still win. A lot of people didn't think he could win against Hillary, and he did, but Hillary was much less likable than Michelle Obama. I think we should get ready for a possible bait and switch. I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that this is something to look forward to. Thank you.
is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, Bob, I got some responses to a couple of the monologues you played before. First off, whenever a politician says, oh, I'm not running for president, I always think of really good athletes and they'll say, oh, it was a team effort. You scored like 81 points for your team. What do you mean a team effort?
Yeah.
The other team was just sitting
I'm
on the sideline.
I'm not running. I'm just thinking of doing what's best for the American... Maybe if the American people need me, but I'm only doing it for the American people.
I will say, not this year. I think Joe is trying to stay in the race.
Oh, he wants. Oh, Joe wants to stay in. He thinks he's doing a great job.
Yeah, but your whole Michelle Obama thing, I'm going to wait another 4 years. I'm predicting 4 years she will announce I am running for president for sure, but not right now yet. I don't think it's a replace situation.
From the
yet.
Bottom of my heart, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I know. So, some other stuff too about the other situation with the hush money trial. I am surprised. We are really upset with our legal system. Surprise, surprise that the legal system is broken in America again. Well, I am shocked.
Well, the Democrats have been claiming it was broken for years, broken against African Americans. But for Trump, we're supposed to expect the rule of law and respect it.
It's malarkey. The whole case was malarkey in the first place. And I'm trying to be as clean as possible because we're on the radio and
exactly.
Everything. But if I was...
I'm thinking of the same words too.
If I was on a podcast... Listen, I'm not surprised by what was happening. I could predict this a mile away that this was the kind of situation that was going to arise with this whole court case. And this goes along with any other Trump court case that's coming up still for him or any court case that has gone previous. It's just a complete waste of time. They're making him spend money. In fact, in the whole result of this, I don't know if you've seen the after effects of the whole situation.
Oh, Donald Trump's campaign, their server broke within like an hour afterwards.
Yeah.
And $30 million were raised the first day. It went up to $50 million mm-hmm. by the second day. I don't even know what it is today. It's probably way above that.
Yeah. And not only that, but the support numbers, I don't know if you've seen in the polls now, they've increased by 5% more now all of a sudden.
So, I hope somebody sits down with the judge and says, if you send him to prison, his numbers will go through the roof even more. But this judge could do anything. I do not put it beyond him to put Trump in jail. I think it's more likely that they'll just tell him where he can campaign and where he can't campaign. And I can't allow, but he won't be allowed to go to the swing states to campaign, but possibly. He'll be allowed to go to Florida where he's going to win anyway. But who knows? All bets are off the table. This judge, he could do anything.
See, I thought Trump would at least send a thank you card. Look how much money I got and look how much more support you just gave me. So take that. One last thing. I don't know if you heard about The View this past Friday after the announcement was made.
There's nothing those squawking chickens could do that would impress me.
Well, in this case, the very last minute of the whole show, they wasted their entire minute on the air, not informing the crowd of anything, just chanting the word.
Oh, you mean they've ever informed the crowd of something before?
No, they just continually chanted the word guilty over and over for one straight minute. And then the last thing I want to mention, because I'm not hearing it anywhere else besides conservative media, Hunter Biden is up for trial. Hello. And these are some serious charges that can get him into prison sentences.
Yeah, I will be very surprised if Hunter Biden goes to prison. I don't think it's going to happen. I think
he will, but the Biden family knows how to, you know, skirt around it and make sure that his time is either a little less or they're able to get him out.
Maybe
in the first
some
place.
Kind of slap on there. And of course, Joe's got to abide by the decision because we've always got to trust our court system,
right?
Joe.
Exactly. So,
frankly, I don't care about Hunter. I'd rather see Biden go to jail, but that's not going to happen.
No.
After all, the special prosecutor determined, the special counsel determined that Biden was not mentally fit to stand trial. Mm-hmm. He's only mentally fit to be our president for the next 4 years.
Right? But again, I still think this Hunter Biden trial, if it does go through and he is guilty, I actually do think that's going to, again, affect Biden's numbers in the polls later on and just help Trump's numbers.
Well, it'll be the difference between someone who's really guilty and someone who's. And by the way, speaking of election interference, we had so many people signing off, these ex people from the CIA, etc., signing off that the laptop story done by the New York Post was false Russian disinformation. That has absolutely been proven to be false. That was totally election interference. Why isn't Bragg sending them to jail?
No, because the media doesn't want to focus on that, and neither does the court cases. They're focused on, oh, well, Trump's guilty and that's it. Just Push that. That's
kangaroo courts never have anything to do with the truth.
Totally. All right, so we have a very important day, not for our country's history, but I would say another country that's next to us. It is Mexico, of course. They are having their election today.
And it's a female that's running.
That's correct. Right now, the early numbers, right now, I think they don't end the votes till 8 o'clock tonight, so it's just before your show ends live on the air. But as of right now, the leader in the whole polls is a female Jewish engineer that's running against an indigenous female tech entrepreneur and a millennial congressman currently. And I'll go into more details about their background.
So three people are running.
Specifically, there's three most popular votes in there. But right now, the female Jewish engineer by the name of Claudia Sheinbaum.
Now, is she also of Hispanic descent?
She is of Hispanic descent.
That's certainly a Jewish-sounding last name.
It is, definitely. I was surprised by that. But I'll go more into details about her in a second. But she's leading the polls by like 30% or something like that.
So they're crazy, willing to overlook Israel's prosecution of the indigenous poor Palestinians?
Is that weird? So let me go over this super quick. So if you don't know, Mexico's government runs completely different than ours. For presidency, you only get one term for 6 years, and that's it. You cannot run for a second term at all. So you get some fresh new perspectives, but during that 6 years, you better run that country smoothly, because otherwise you're where Mexico is right now, which is drug cartels are running the country.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How much is it really run by the government, and how much is it really run by the cartel anyway? And do the cartel want a woman president? That might have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador was the last president, and man, his approval rating was just, you thought Joe Biden's was low. Oh boy, he was pretty low too on the same scale. And even more so, I watched 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago because they were going to have an interview with him to do a review of his whole presidency. And man, that dude just could not save any of his policies if you could have just thrown at him like something good once, and he would have just been so critical of himself over and over. As a president, you got to show confidence that, okay, I'm putting out this policy and we're going to do it. But every single time,
a little bit of humility and self-reflection is good, but you're saying he overdid it?
No, he overdid it with everything, and I just couldn't believe it myself.
Yeah, if they sound like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, I've done a bad job as president.
Yeah. And not only that, But now you can't be president, obviously. But you can still run for other government offices that you can do in your own
like
country.
Like maybe dog catcher or something like that.
I was going governor, but if you wanted to go there, yeah.
Oh, there's a difference these days between governors and dog catchers?
Yeah, but because of that, now you're going to get even more criticism towards yourself that you can't be a very confident and proud citizen of your own country or who we could represent if you're going to be doing that. So let me go into the details about this. The front runner, like I said, was Claudia Sheinbaum, who is 61 and is the former mayor of Mexico City. Sheinbaum is promising to continue the programs of President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, who is also the founder of the Morena Party and a longtime icon of left politics.
You're saying she is more to the left? This
Correct.
One?
Yes.
Now, yeah. I don't like that. Happy as I am that there's some corner in the world that isn't persecuting people for being Jewish. That was a tongue-in-cheek remark yes. I made about Palestine a few moments ago. I don't want to see a leftist either. And unfortunately, a lot of my Jewish peers are leftists. Mm-hmm.
The way I viewed this election, by the way, if you were wondering, is exactly like the French presidential, except for that, I forgot who was the right-wing person that was there in that state. My goodness, just the things that that person would say, like Trump said some scathing stuff, but if you translated what he was saying in French, I have to look up what his name was again, it was even worse. He was second place in the votes. I was like, I'm questioning your thought process on that one there. Also, just a heads up, this is a slight little detail. Voters on Sunday are also going to be choosing some new Congress members, 20,000 local officials, Mexico City mayor, 8 governors, and the 20,000 local officials are part of all 31 states and the capital of Mexico. So this is a brand new, huge vote. You could change the entire government scale all in once this year. So this is a very, very important vote.
Any discussion in their political narrative about the open border from their point of view about how many people are leaving their country to come to the United States or
once again,
going from other countries through Mexico to get to the United States?
Well, once again, following with the president, he even mentioned that I apologize for the open borders and there's only so much I could do as president and I wish there was things I could have done better and that stuff. And I'm like, well, why didn't you implement it? If you knew that there were solutions to the issue, why don't you just try to implement it and see what happens? It's the best you could do as president, but no, you're just going to wallow in woop, like you said, like Eeyore from
Winnie the
Pooh.
Well, at least he's not bragging about what a good job he's doing at the border like Biden does.
Yes, that's right. So here's the other thing too right now. They've already gotten reports that there's some Mexicans that are nullifying their own votes by writing in names of 110,000 or more people that have disappeared due to drug cartels kidnapping them as a way of protesting.
I understand that makes a statement. But yes. It's such a wasted vote. I understand we go to the polls. We have limited choices. Sometimes it's the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. But the alternative is the greater of two evils. Don't go writing people's names in.
And don't get me started on, what was it? During Hillary Clinton's and Donald Trump's election, there was people writing down Harambe, which was the gorilla that was shot and killed.
People, I know somebody that wants to write in Mike Pence this time. Mike Pence isn't going to win. You write in Mike Pence, you may as well have written in Joe Biden. Because you split the conservative vote.
Right. And it's just wasting your own voice that you could have had to make a change in this country. So I'm going to go start with the person that is in third place right now currently. His name is Jorge Alvarez Menéndez. And I apologize for all these pronunciations. He's 38 and he's representing a small but growing party called the Citizens Movement. The federal deputy has focused his campaign on youth vote, portraying himself as the only candidate who can change the old style Mexican politics. Menéndez earned a degree in international relations from a Jesuit university at the Institute of Technology and Higher Studies of the West. At age 25, he became a state lawmaker for the long-ruling Institutional Revolutionary Party, or the PRI. 3 years later, he resigned from the PRI to join the centrist Citizens Movement. He jumped into the presidential race in January after the withdrawal of the party's most popular presidential candidate, Samuel Garcia, the governor of the northern state of Nuevo León. Menéndez says that he would reduce the country's reliance on military to fight organized crime because the president has decided to use the army to help fight this organized crime instead of using the police or any local officials for that matter. He also wants to establish a legal regulated market for marijuana and shift the state-owned oil and electrify companies towards renewable energy. So it sounds like a very Gen Z is the term I'm thinking of. Sounds like a very Gen Z looking at the world of politics these days. So I'm not surprised. We're not in that time period yet, especially in Mexico, where it's a lot of older folks still that live in that country. So I'm not surprised he's third place. He's still way behind in the race, and he's more than likely not going to win. So moving on. Second place currently, and again, I'm mispronouncing these names, so I do apologize. Xochitl Galvez is in second place. She's 61, and she represents a coalition of opposition parties from the center right and center left. So she views herself as a centrist, which I know
which
how
means
you feel
you're
about
trying
that.
To please everybody and you please nobody.
Exactly.
It always sounds so good. I'm a moderate. I'm a centrist.
And like most
worthless.
And like most centrists, I would say they're completely boring. She's like a plain talker.
Also, center always changes. As the left moves further left, the centrist to be halfway between the right, which stays where it is,
yes,
and the left. It has to keep moving leftward, so the difference becomes negligible.
I totally agree. So she was the executive in her political career for the Conservative Party, known as the National Action Party, or the PAN. Before that, though, she was admitted to the UNAM, which is their university in Mexico there, and she studied computer engineering. She founded two tech companies that contribute to design and the maintenance of artificial intelligent energy efficient buildings. I know how you feel about AI, so there's
one thing. Yeah, this isn't helping my impression much.
But in 2000, a newly elected president, Vicente Fox of the PAN, named her as the head of the Federal Commission to Oversee Indigenous Affairs. She was eventually elected leader of the Miguel Hidalgo Borough of Mexico City, and in 2018, a member of the Mexican Senate. In 2023, she gained spotlight there because she appeared at a presidential palace demanding to be admitted to López Obrador's daily morning news conference. She wanted to rebuke his charges that she favored eliminating government pensions for the elderly in Mexico. The president then was not very good in debating other politicians, so he looked really, really bad in front of her, and so she gained popularity for outspeaking towards the president there. Since then, she has been campaigning to tackle crime, strengthening government watchdog institutions created during the democratic transition, bolstering ties with the United States, and attracting more companies to nearshore their production closer to the United States market. So, in other words, she's really more focused on the business side, I would say. Less really on the, I would say, crime side of things. The top two things that the Mexican citizens are scared of right now, or they're mostly looking towards in the election, number one is the cartel situation, and number two is bolstering Mexico's economy, which is just
dwindling. And unfortunately, those are becoming our concerns as well. Of course, I'm waiting for the day when artificial intelligence declares its own gender and lobbies for its own rights.
Well, thanks to her, if she's elected president, she might be getting closer to that situation. So, let's get into the person who is more than likely going to win this election, Claudia Sheinbaum. Sheinbaum grew up in Mexico City. She was the daughter of two leftist scientists. The family was close to Raul Alvarez Garin, a leader of the 1968 pro-democracy protests that were brutally suppressed by secretary forces. Sheinbaum earned a PhD in environmental engineering. Here we go.
Oh, joy.
She conducted doctoral research at the University of California at Berkeley for several years in the 1990s. She has published dozens of academic articles on energy, global warming. Sorry, I can't read that without laughing. Global warming, the environment, and sustainable development, and contributed to reports for climate change, which won a Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. But that's, you know, that's because you're just feeding to the ego.
That was once
people.
A prestigious award.
So if elected, Sheinbaum would be the first Jewish head of state in predominantly Catholic Mexico. She's recalled celebrating holidays such as Yom Kippur with her grandparents, who fled discrimination and Nazi persecution in their native Bulgaria and Lithuania. But she says she doesn't practice religious personally. In other words, she's not really religious, I'm going to say. She just has a Jewish background.
Did she change the name from Yom Kippur to Yom Kukaracha? Just wondering.
No, I don't think so.
Just thinking out loud.
Also, she started getting into university politics when she was studying environmental engineering. And I'm putting air quotes for those people on radio.
Yes.
And she actually organized a strike in 1987 against an increase in fees and tightening of entrance requirements. Later on, she married Carlos Amaz, who was a leftist politician. She was under some scrutiny with him because he was actually seen carrying bags of money during a campaign that he was running, and he was actually using that money for personal spending instead of for his
No.
Yeah, I know. And And so in order to save her a little bit, she immediately divorced him a month after the situation arised and he was getting into more trouble and more scandals based on campaign financing, in quotes.
Well, she certainly sounds like an interesting person.
She's saving her own patoot, basically. So in 2015, Sheinbaum became borough president of Tlalpan in southern Mexico City. 3 years later, as Lopez Obrador won the presidency, she was elected mayor of the capital. She is known as a malicious problem solver and a low-key but fiercely loyal disciple of the president, which means, once again, oh, ho-hum, I'm so sad. My policies weren't working. I wish there was something I can do, but nothing's going on. So, once again, her focus is specifically increasing aid to poor Mexicans, consolidating government's role in the energy sector, quotes, and she wants to reorientate the country towards renewable energy and rely more on police and National Guard rather than the army to reduce violence. There's a one positive thing. Here we go. We can reduce the use of the army and use the police and National Guard to help with the cartel situation in the country. Hallelujah. Thank goodness for that one positive thing about
her.
Well,
except shouldn't they use the army too? They should use whatever they could. I'm all for using the police and the National Guard.
But nothing, but the vice president used nothing but the army. Oh. He didn't think that the police had any resources to deal with the
cartel.
And
you're thinking the police might have just done a better job than the army was doing?
Probably, yeah. Because, again, the army needs to concentrate on, I don't know, national defense.
Like
still
maybe protecting the border?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Something like that? So, as you can tell, it's a very liberal election over there, for sure, overall. And it's going to be interesting to see where this presidency goes. I don't want to say this out loud, but I'm thinking that Mexico has the Obama effect where, oh, we can make history. Let's vote for the first female president.
Yes, we can. Yeah. Change. Hope and change.
I just want to remind Mexico, remember, look at the policies before you just strun in the vote. Oh, I want to make history. Look at the policies first. Look
hope
at the
and change, and change may be all you have left after that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then after that, I have one sad story that has to do with our own very own city, San Diego. And then another sad story I had to end with, I know, but it's in the entertainment world for that matter. So we'll go ahead and take a break.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
All right, Bob. So, sad news, unfortunately. There was a study done by a company called Pods. Now, Pods, if you don't know, is this moving company that will send a very big box in front of your house so you could put in stuff, and then they would ship it across the country. Who owns Pods? U-Haul. So U-Haul did the study, and basically they were able to find out which cities are people moving out the most.
Well, they would know since people use U-Haul to move.
Constantly. And they found out in their study, number one on that list, unfortunately, is our own city of San Diego, California. Last year, if you were wondering, we were ranked number 14 in the country. So we just jumped up all the way to number one out of nowhere, out of the sky blue. But
that really surprises me. Why wouldn't Los Angeles and New York, I know we're having our problems, but particularly with the open border, but crime, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, they're way ahead of us.
Right.
There.
Well, LA is number two, if that's any, I don't know, pride. Well,
they're number two in a lot of ways, but we won't go into that.
That was clever, Bob. I'll give you credit.
And I could say it on the radio, too.
Last year, Los Angeles was ranked number one. This year, they're ranked number two. I can't answer why that happened. I can answer why San Diego on the top of my head. I mean, inflation costs, like you said, the open border issues. I would say salary jobs. Maybe LA has better salary jobs, I'm going to guess. That's the only reason why people are moving out as fast as San Diego.
Well, of course, the problem is just California.
Yeah.
Itself.
I mean, the top three are California cities. Number three is San Francisco, for goodness sake.
Oh,
so,
who on earth would want to live there?
I don't know. I don't know. Except if you have a really good career up there and you're outside.
Yeah, that you have to make your way through feces to get to your career every day.
It's true. It's gross, yeah. If you were wondering about some other ones, there's some other California cities on here, by the way. This is the top 20. Bakersfield's on here, Fresno, and Santa Barbara, Stockton.
I lived in Santa Barbara for 5 years. That's one of my favorite cities. Yeah, that's very sad.
Yeah, it's ranked number 12 currently. Last year it was ranked number 10. Stockton and Modesto are on the list as well.
So no one's trying to get out of Gila Bend, Arizona as bad as these other places?
No, apparently not. And then you were mentioning New York, either off the air or just now, one of the two. But New York is ranked number 5 in the country with Long Island, New York, and Northern New Jersey is ranked number 20. More people are leaving San Diego, and more than New York and LA, for that matter. I don't know if it's combined, but
I must say that surprises me, not so much because it's part of California, but just because it seemed like San Diego was doing a little bit. Although our board of supervisors is outrageous, so maybe some people are just looking at the handwriting on the wall and getting out while they can.
Well, our mayor is saying, no, everything's just fine, you know?
What else are they going to say?
I know. And then lastly, I'm going to end it off on some more sad news. So Garfield and Mad Max Furiosa are doing top in the box office this weekend. However, I don't know if you've been seeing those numbers. They are dwindling like crazy, unfortunately.
Yeah, since, I guess, to some degree, it was already going on with the streaming service, but I think it was really COVID and the shutdown.
Right.
I was surprised movie theaters ever came back at all, but they're not doing very well.
Right. Regal had to file bankruptcy in AMC as well.
And it's too bad. My wife and I still enjoy the experience of going into theater, although I'll sit in the back. I hate having my seat kicked, but
no, totally.
I'll sit in the back. But I love the experience and the popcorn. And when you watch something on a streaming channel, it's just not the same.
No, I agree.
And then if your phone rings, you feel free to get it. Theater is meant to be a separate experience.
Right. Do you remember the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, and they're out in
space. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Great movie.
I saw that in theaters, and I was extremely impressed. I loved it from start to finish. I was so into it.
Some movies have to be seen in theaters.
Exactly, because I was going to get to that. My parents rented it at a Redbox or something and brought it home, and I was watching it on a smaller screen TV, and I'm like, this is just not hitting.
If you haven't seen Ben-Hur on the big screen, you haven't seen it.
Right.
Obviously, the Star Wars movies, 2001 has got to be seen.
Right.
On the big screen. It was filmed as a Cinerama originally. The Sound of Music, my favorite movie of all time, even though I know it's a musical and a lot of guys don't like musicals. When I was there in a Century Theater, big, wasn't technically Cinerama, but it was like Cinerama, 80mm curved screen, the curtain slowly opening up and you're listening to the wind and the camera's just fanning over the Swiss Alps till you get to Austria. Mm-hmm. It was the best opening for a movie I had ever seen. It's just not the same on television.
I hear ya.
Even though television screens are flat and are bigger.
You're going to be upset with me. When you said Ben-Hur on the big screen, I was thinking the remake. I didn't think of the original.
I know. I didn't even bother to go see it because I already knew how it was going to feel about it.
It was not going to be the same as the original.
Of course not. Never. Remakes are just never a good idea.
So when it comes to movie theaters, I would say for the big Hollywood stuff, it makes sense to have them in the theaters for sure. Independent ones, they can go on the streaming sites because they're not as impressively shot.
They can't do as well in the theater anyway, so they might as well have a venue where they can perform well within those boundaries.
So Netflix should be buying more independent films, and plus those people buying the streaming might be interested in those more independent films than the
also
Paramount
streaming has
like
problems
that.
All of a sudden the stream freezes or too many people are trying to get on at the same time. There are issues with streaming.
Yeah, and don't get me
it's
started.
Not my favorite venue.
Yeah, and they increase the cost every year on top of that, and now you have ads even though you're paying per month for the actual streaming service.
Also,
as it is.
And I've talked about this before, I'm holding on to my DVD and Blu-ray collection because with all the cancel culture stuff, there's going to be things that you just can't get by streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't have an opportunity to own your own copy, it just will not exist anymore. Or things even worse, it's cut and edited.
I got to increase my Criterion collection at some point for sure. Well, Bob, thank you so much for a great evening.
Brandon,
I'm sorry for so many sad stories. I'll have to get some more
positive.
It's like
the guy in Fiddler. I don't write the news. I simply read it.
That's right. Thank you so much, Bob, again. The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.